Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Moeller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Moeller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Moeller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Moeller Program. The issue of falling fertility rates has been something that has captured the attention of a lot of folks in recent months. We've talked about it on this program. We've talked about the worldview implications and what's really going on in a movement known as anti-natalism, which is a way of saying that it's opposed to babies, wants to reduce the number of babies being born. Well, now of all things, The Economist have jumped into the middle of it, and The Economist magazine, which is kind of a combination of Time magazine and The Wall Street Journal, published in Britain, is out with a cover story this week entitled Falling Fertility. Some of you may have seen it when it was in the mail last week. It's in a lot of newsstands this week. It has a very eye-catching cover. It has a baby with a smile on his face falling through the air with the headline, Falling Fertility, How the Population Problem is Solving Itself. Now, I thought when I received this magazine that it was going to be much like what we've seen before, and that is a rather dispassionate look at falling fertility rates and what they mean. I was shocked when I saw that The Economist, in the midst of this article, for instance, came out and basically had very kind things to say about China's one-child-only policy. After acknowledging that it has very, very disastrous social effects, it went on to say, but hey, it works. And it starts celebrating, as a magazine, these falling fertility rates because it suggests that it can create what it called a Goldilocks moment in terms of optimum employment and can help the economy of developing nations and established nations to reach a stability. Now, I'm going to argue that even from an economic standpoint, this is disastrous, and we're going to be talking about why that is the case. But from the aspect of the sanctity of human life, this is absolutely tragic. And by the way, just looking at this article, it's a reminder to us, once again, here are two words. You can just make it into a bumper sticker and blaze it on your mind. Worldview matters. And rarely is that so graphically demonstrated as in this particular article. Let me just mention to you, by the way, it talks about, at the very end of the article, the fact that women are choosing to have fewer children, but it points out that there are a lot of girls right now growing up who are going to have children. So let me just read to you the last two sentences of the article. They write, "The bad news is that the girls who will give birth to the coming larger generations have already been born. The good news is that they will want far fewer children than their mothers or grandmothers did," end quote. You know, can you imagine, in all seriousness, that here you would have one of the major magazines in the world, one of the most respected media authorities in the world, to say that it's bad news that these girls have been born already. That is, well, it's beyond bizarre. We're now on the other side of the ledger into the very significantly morally troubling kind of language that you do not expect to see. We're going to be talking today about why it is so and why worldview matters when it comes to looking at fertility rates and why, by the way, all this time, all these years after the draconian warnings about the population explosion, people fail to see that the great danger right now are falling birth rates that will lead to an aging population unable to take care of itself. We'll talk about this and more upcoming on the Albert Moeller Program over the next hour. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll look forward to getting to your calls and comments in just a moment. Feel free to write us. We're glad to hear from you at mail@albertmoeller.com. At Twitter, /Albert Moeller and Moeller Radio, and of course, Facebook, the Albert Moeller Program. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. I have been on the road and in the air in recent days. I was in Louisiana at Shreveport in what's called the Arklatex, that area right there in the intersection of Texas and Louisiana and Arkansas. I was preaching to the Louisiana Baptist Pastors Conference, had a great time in Shreveport on Sunday night. I avoided Ida and got out of the Gulf Coast area and came back to Louisville. And today I was down in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, giving the convention message or the convention sermon to the Kentucky Baptist Convention. It's that time of the year when all these fall denominational meetings are taking place. And I had a great, great joy and privilege of being with some wonderful fellow Christians and talking about the gospel and what it means this afternoon. looking again at John chapter 3, and of course there the discussion between Jesus and Nicodemus. And the major point I was trying to make there is our gospel assignment, what the gospel is, as Jesus declared it so clearly using that unforgettable language about being born again. But another point I wanted to make is that when you look at the gospel, and this is something where we're talking about worldviews, there's a point here that needs to be made. You may remember that as Nicodemus came to Jesus, Jesus said to him, unless you are born again, you cannot see the kingdom of God. Now, one of the things that really comes to light there, we're talking about worldview here, is that Christianity and the Christian gospel can only be understood from the inside. Now, you can understand things about the gospel. You can understand truths that Christians believe. You can look at it from outside belief, from outside the church, from outside the gospel. You can try to stand on the outside and be a dispassionate observer, but it will never make sense to you because it's really only understood from the inside. And that's why when it comes to the Christian worldview, it's not enough. It's not enough just to hold to the principles of the Christian worldview. That's important. And I'm thankful that there are those who hold to the principles of that worldview who are not even Christians. And by the way, that is how we ended up with this civilization we know. This civilization was established upon an explicitly Christian worldview. And when, for instance, when you go back to the founding era of the United States, it is not true that all those founders were Christians. They were not all believing Christians. By no theological or adequate biblical definition would you suggest that they were all believers. But the reality is that they did hold to the basic principles of the Christian worldview. But I feel every once in a while in this program, as much as we talk about the Christian worldview, we have to come back again and again to say, it's not enough to hold to the Christian worldview. From a biblical understanding of the gospel, what Jesus said to Nicodemus is, you must be born again. You can't understand it from the outside looking in. You can only understand it from the inside. As the Apostle Paul said, that if you confess with your lips that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. As Jesus said, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him might not perish, but have everlasting life. Now that, of course, was in that context of the conversation with Nicodemus, where he spoke about being born again. The one who's born again is the one who believes the things revealed concerning Jesus Christ, his incarnation, his substitutionary atonement, his death, burial, and resurrection. And in coming to believe in Christ, one is no longer on the outside, one is on the inside. And there the Christian worldview is not merely a worldview. It's a way of life, a discipleship, and all the rest. If any of you at any time want to know more about the gospel of Jesus Christ, want to understand more than the worldview, I'm glad to hear from you in anything. But I'd particularly be honored for you to email me about that question. And I guarantee you there are folks who are going to want to get in touch with you on my staff, and I myself will be thrilled to hear that anyone wants to know more about the gospel. Email me, mail@albertmoeller.com. By the way, you can go to my website at albertmoeller.com. Not only there will you find a lot of articles, but you'll find on that left-hand column, Powerline, which is an extensive series of expository messages. And under the articles and speeches and other things, you'll find a great deal of the teaching that I do here and elsewhere, preaching in churches, such as what I just did in Shreveport and here in Kentucky. And we want to offer that to you as well. It's all there, free, no charge, and want to invite you to take advantage of that. Folks, there are some big things out there in the news. I think the most troubling thing that has happened in the last 24 hours is the response of President Barack Obama to the health care legislation program adopted by the House, when he's made very clear that he is now calling for a reduction in the provisions concerning the exclusion of abortion coverage. Very clear statements. The New York Times, here's the headline, Obama seeks revision of plans abortion limits. What you have here is that the pro-abortion side has caught on to exactly what's going on. And thus you have the call for a reversal of the so-called solution that was adopted by the House of Representatives. Now, let's just face what's going on here. This is raw power politics. The House of Representatives adopted that by a vote of 220 to 215. They had to have 218 votes, and Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, was willing to accept a vote on that very, very pro-life amendment because in the end, she knew it wouldn't get through the conference committee, and she knew it wouldn't be in the final legislation. So even as there are those who have been celebrating avidly and eagerly this win for the pro-life cause, just recognize that those who allowed it to be put into place are now subverting it publicly, starting at the very top, at the President of the United States. We'll be watching this one with you. We're going to come back to talk about what falling fertility rates mean, not just in terms of demographics and population, but in terms of the heart of a people and what they understand about the dignity and sanctity of human life and the meaning of what it means to be human. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Let me give you a little heads up about what we're going to be talking about the rest of this week. Tomorrow's Ask Anything Wednesday, of course, so remember to send in your question. Get ready to call tomorrow. We'll be talking about what's on your mind. On Thursday, we're going to be talking about a fascinating story from the New York Times. It was in Sunday's edition. Here's the headline: Can a boy wear a skirt to school? Here's the subtitle: When gender bends the dress code, high schools struggle to respond. You're living in a new America when you have schools struggling with whether or not they need to expand the dress code to allow boys to wear skirts and girls to wear tuxes. And one of the most amazing things is, of course, this is all expressed in the context of liberation, people liberated to do these things. And, it's going to be worth talking about. Fascinating stuff embedded in that article in the New York Times. I'll be writing about it overnight. You'll find my article published over the next couple of days at albertmueller.com. Another interesting article I'm going to be posting over the next 24 hours or so is on the churches that are beginning to have, I kid you not, this is in the Associated Press, the New York Times, the San Jose paper over the weekend, services for animals. And you're literally talking about theology gone to the dogs here, pun intended. It's very, very sad, but very revealing about what happens when you abandon the gospel and you apparently have very little other to say. And we're going to be talking about that on Friday on this program, which is going to be a very interesting conversation. It's revealing. When you're inviting dogs instead of people to sit in your pews, and when you're calling them family and suggesting that that they are more or less just like you, we got a problem here. And I guarantee you, you're not going to find a conservative evangelical church that understands the gospel confused on this issue. And we're going to be looking at certain patterns that are revealed in all of this. So that's what's coming up in the next couple of days. Go to the website at albertmueller.com. You'll find articles, including today's object of our conversation. We're going to be talking about this cover story in The Economist magazine. The picture really does catch your attention. Here's a baby, big grin on his face, wearing only a diaper, falling through the air. Falling fertility is the cover story. And it's talking, of course, about what has been noted, and that is that fertility rates are falling more or less worldwide. Now, we have known they were falling in Europe and in other major advanced economies. The sociological explanation comes down to this. People explain that once you don't live on a farm anymore, you don't need farm hands. Once you have higher education, once you have access to birth control technologies, people have fewer babies. And by the way, that's exactly what's happening. Right now, you have nations like France, Germany, even Poland, of all things. Now, Spain, the Mediterranean nations, following the earlier example of the northern European nations and Scandinavia, of falling birth rates, falling so far that they are well beneath the replacement level. That means you're going to have net population loss. But not only is it a smaller number of people, I mean, folks, you know the demography. You're talking about people living longer. And so what you're going to end up with is an imbalance of very, very old people with fewer and fewer younger people to actually work in the factories and drive the ambulances and do all the things that people have to do for an economy and as a society to work. Now, this particular cover story in The Economist is celebrating the fact that the population explosion, it looks like, really isn't going to happen. Instead, there are going to be gains from having more people employed. Now, let me just point out the obvious here. I mean, this is just a simple matter of math. If you have unemployment, the unemployment rate, say, is X right now, of course, are very troubled by a 10.2% unemployment rate in the United States of America. You know one way to get to lower that unemployment rate? Reduce the number of people. If you reduce the number of people and you do not reduce the number of jobs, you're going to have a better unemployment rate. What we're looking at in the future is not an unemployment problem. What we're looking at in the future is going to be an understaffing problem. That there simply isn't going to be a sufficient number of persons to do the jobs. Now, there are all kinds of issues and angles to this. We're going to be talking about why this Economist article is so troubling. Well, just to give you a foretaste, let me read to you something. The China one-child-only policy is the most draconian. It is the most terroristic. It is the most totalitarian, by definition, approach to lowering population. In China, a couple's allowed one child, period. There are exceptions for persons who need farmhands and all the rest, but for the vast majority of the teeming millions in China, it is one child only. And, well, The Economist acknowledges there are problems, but I want you to notice, remember, this is a state-mandated program that includes forced sterilizations, forced abortions, and the widespread practice of killing baby girls because mom and dad would prefer to have a boy. Strong bias toward boys in Confucian cultures. Now, let me just read to you what The Economist says. You would think you would not read something like this in 2009 from a respected magazine from Europe. But listen, here's what they write. I quote, China's one-child policy, which began nationwide in the early 1970s, China's population is probably 300 million to 400 million lower now than it would have been without it. The policy, which is one of population control, not birth control, has had dreadful costs, including widespread female infanticide, a lopsided sex ratio, and horrors such as mass sterilization and forced abortions. But in its own terms, it has worked. 200 million people enter the workforce each year instead of 40 million, and to the extent that China is polluting less than it would have done, it has benefited the rest of the world. End quote. I find that absolutely shocking. I mean, just think about what they're saying here. They're saying, yes, by the way, the Chinese government leads to, by this policy, to forced sterilizations, to coerced abortions, to the fact that baby girls are routinely killed. That's what infanticide means, after they are born. And to a sex ratio that means that an incredible number of millions of Chinese young men will never have wives to get married because there are no girls for them. In spite of all those things, which are indeed documented in this article, they're even listed as a dreadful cost. The article cheerily says, hey, it's worked. And not only that, it has not only worked, but it has benefited the rest of the world. Well, folks, just imagine of saying that about other kinds of state-sponsored totalitarian coercion. Of course it works. I mean, this is a horrible moral argument. All kinds of things work. If a pragmatic test of truth and morality is all you've got, and that's really all that The Economist seems to employ, it acknowledges those dreadful costs, but if it obviously doesn't think they're so dreadful because it's willing to say some good words about the policy. And then that last couplet of sentences I read, it really is frightening to me. The bad news, I'm quoting here from the article, is that the girls who will give birth to the coming larger generations have already been born. The good news is that they will want far fewer children than their mothers or grandmothers did. End quote. Unbelievable. But that's where we are. The phone number to join the discussion is 877-893-8255. Join the conversation by calling 877-893-TALK. And here's the question. What does it say to you that here you have a major news magazine celebrating falling fertility rates? Do we understand what this really means? Let me just point out one obvious consequence of this kind of falling fertility rate. This means that fewer people are actually involved in having and in raising children. Now, listen to me, please. For most of human history, one of the central endeavors of humanity has been getting married, having children, and investing lives in the raising of those children. As a matter of fact, I would argue that it is common sense wisdom to understand that it is that keeps society sane and healthy. Defining the society in terms of what is good for children. Well, guess what? If you don't have any children, you don't have to worry about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about falling fertility rates, and in particular, the cover story in The Economist of London, major financial business magazine. And it is championing falling fertility rates as a sign that, we got hope on the horizon here. People are having fewer and fewer babies, and it sees that as a good thing. Now, the net number of human beings will still grow for some time, but the average number of children born to a couple, well, that's falling fast. Now, on this program, we've talked about this as we've looked at it from different angles. We've talked about the fact that in Russia, the army's afraid it's not even going to be able to basically field an adequate force because there aren't enough boys right now in Russia to grow up to be its soldiers. And they've already said that publicly. You've got in Japan a real crisis coming up where so many elderly are now surviving and so few younger people are coming along that, here's a headline, USA Today, a glimpse of the future, robots aid Japan's elderly residents. So, I mean, is that what it's going to be down to? We're going to have to make robots to take care of the elderly? It's a pretty frightening scenario. Sounds like science fiction, but that's in USA Today, November the 4th, 2009, article by Callum McLeod. We're looking at some fascinating aspects to this. I've talked about my disappointment in The Economist for its rather cheery language concerning China's one-child-only policy. Let me tell you, here's something else that concerns me. And this, again, is one of those things that comes about and tells us it's worse than we think. Here is today's USA Today. Not yesterday, today. And here's the op-ed piece in Today, November 10, 2009. Here's the headline, "Without Family Planning, Poverty Will Spread Across the Globe and Children Will Die." This is an article by actress Ashley Judd. Okay, we got lots of problems here. One problem is that, of course, here's another example of Hollywood celebrity trying to think big thoughts. And, we're a society that had Meryl Streep, who once played we had an actress that once played a doctor, give testimony in the Senate about the deleterious effects of Alar sprayed on apples. It's the ultimate, where we actually bring in Hollywood actors and actresses and say, okay, you play a doctor on TV, you're famous, so talk to us about medicine. Well, now Ashley Judd's going to talk about this, but listen, here's a sentence directly taken from her article, at least it's over her name, in USA Today, listen to this, unregulated fertility is an under-recognized global crisis. I'm just shocked she uses the word unregulated. I mean, she uses it again on the third column over. In my work around the world, I have seen irrefutable evidence that unregulated fertility undermines every other effort to improve health, living standards, the economy, and the environment. Unregulated. Who's going to regulate? Isn't that an interesting question? Well, in China, you've got regulated fertility. That's what it looks like. Now in USA Today, you've got a Hollywood actress saying that, well, being unregulated, fertility is a threat. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. So Lewistown, Pennsylvania, Bob's on the line. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi. I don't agree with China. That's just wrong. But I do agree that we need to do something about growth. I think it's morally irresponsible for us to have more than, say, one or two children.
Okay.
Who's going to take care of them?
Well, let's put it this way. Who's not going to take care of them? I don't understand what you mean when you say it's morally irresponsible to have more than one or two children. Where did you come up with that?
I don't know. It's a personal thought. You know, I believe in the zero population growth. I don't think that the days of the farmers, say, where they would have a half dozen kids because accidents, poor medical back then, that's over. We have great, great medicine today.
All right.
I think having one or two children is more than enough.
Okay, Bob, I want to give it your say, but you say one child, then you're not even replacing the couple, right?
Right. One, hey, two at the most. I can go with replacing you and your wife. I understand it. That's all I've done.
Okay, and it takes 2.1 given mortality in order to do that. But you're still going to have a rapidly aging population, even with two, Bob. I mean, you're still going to end up with geriatric wards that are filled and nurseries that are going to be largely empty. Because when you move to that kind of falling birth rate, I mean, even just at pragmatic terms, just even in the math, let's put it this way. You got to have people earning the dollars that go into, for instance, Social Security for people to receive Social Security. The economy doesn't work when more people are retired than working. And you don't have to worry about that on the farm, but you're going to have to worry about that when you're in a nursing home. And the question is, who's going to actually be working in the electrical plants? If there isn't a larger group of population coming behind you, then it's going to be really, really frighteningly impoverished, poor, and lonely at the top, because it's just going to be a society of old people, presumably taking care of themselves. Or like in Japan, as USA Today reports, with robots. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Very interesting conversation there, Bob, calling from Pennsylvania. He was honest when I said, where did you get this idea of one or two children? He said, more or less just from within. I understand. If we're just thinking about this in terms of our own immediate context, a lot of people can come up with different numbers. I'm not suggesting that I know the magic number of children any couple should have. Let's be very clear. I'm not seeking to dictate that. I'm saying that what we should fear is what some people want, which is a regulated fertility. I am telling you, I have big concerns about this. Worldview concerns, absolutely. Moral concerns, you bet. Economic concerns, demographic concerns, social concerns. Who's going to actually be, well, the worker bees in a society that... That is just tilting itself away from having children. But there's something about the natural family that God has given us that should lead us to understand that there has never been a society that is not seen as its central project to the raising of the young. That is the central project of every civilization. You could almost say, by definition, the societies that survive are the societies that do a good job of bringing the next generations along. The societies that become defunct, that disappear, that become dysfunctional, they're the ones that are far less adept at this. And there's something I believe that is theological, and I'll just put my convictions right out here in public. I think that one of the moral restraints upon a people is the concern for the welfare of the young. There are certain things that adults will not do if they believe they will harm children. Or at least that has been the great moral restraint throughout human history. But of course, if you really put children off the horizon, you don't have to worry about that anymore. And that's why these adult-only enclaves, well, they're not accountable to children. They're not accountable to the needs of a society to raise children. That's why when you put all these 20-somethings and 30-somethings in these urban canisters of condos, you know, it's a very different kind of moral lifestyle because they're not really concerned with the raising of children. Once a society writ large goes that direction, I think it sows the seeds of its own destruction, and I think a cursory review of history will make that clear. Of course, I think there's more to it than that. As a Christian theologian, I have to tell you, I think that there's a great loss of the visible glory of God in this. There's an embrace by a civilization of an anti-baby kind of mentality, an anti-natalism, which goes hand in hand with the breakdown of marriage, natural family, you name it. The natural constraints and institutions of life, the habits of the heart, they're all being changed before our eyes. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. James is listening on WFIA. Go ahead, James.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Mohler, what I wanted to say was that I'm 40 years old, and I can honestly say that in the next 20 years, I feel in my heart that the United States will enact a policy similar to China's, but it will be selective. It'll be selective in how the individual, and you hit it on the head earlier in what you stated about being a society that takes care of its young, the natural order, being a Christian society. Secularists will be able to have children, as many as they want, but if you are a Christian, you're licensing to be a parent will be denied.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the licensing, James. We did a program on this some time back, and people suggested, I got lots of mail from people who said that's absolutely scaremongering. But we were taking it from a major news source at the time. It was one of the major newspapers in this country that published an op-ed piece suggesting that parents ought to be licensed. One of the weirdest worlds you can enter, and I realize if you don't go there, you won't know this, but one of the weirdest worlds you could enter, and I'll be glad to take you there sometime if I ever had the opportunity, is the world of law journals. That is where lawyers argue legal theory. I have access to those law journals and their electronic database, and you start looking at that, you'll realize in some of the most illustrious law schools of this country, there are policy proposals being seriously considered that would require the licensing of parents. And, of course, it's not law right now anywhere. It is, however, when it comes to foster parenting. It is when it comes to adoption. For instance, right now, if you are in some states, and simply because I do not want to complicate the lives of some parents and would-be parents, I'm not even going to mention those states, but in some states, you've got to basically say, I will apply for a license to be an adoptive parent or a foster parent, and I'm going to have to sign on to X, Y, and Z, some of which is nothing more than ideological coercion. So it's not the kind of responsible question you would consider about those who would take responsibility to raise a child. It's something very, very different. James, I don't know where this is going. I can tell you that this idea of licensing parents is something that fits in with the mentality of regulating fertility and regulating every aspect of life, which is where some would like us to go. I have no timetable or understanding of exactly when or how that might happen, but I can tell you it's verifiable that that's being discussed in some law schools today. And the scary thing is that some of that stuff that's discussed gets out into public policy. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Heather wrote into Facebook to say that we should be concerned when the world does not value the family unit and the birth of children. You know, what about children that have more than two children? Many people in this society think they are crazy. Scare caps on that one, just so we get the point. I have not really figured it out. When did two children become the magical number? Well, very interesting article I read on that just recently suggesting that magical number came after World War II, in particular in the late 50s and in the 1960s, when, as you may note, there was a shift, and this is one of the interesting barometers of the public worldview. There was a shift in sitcoms, in family-situated television programs, from an average of three or four children to an average of one or two. But if you are architecturally designing your family, an awful lot of couples are going to have two in order to have, at least in theory, the opportunity to have one of each. You know, when you start looking at this, you realize there's some subtle clues about how all this comes about. I don't think there's a magic number of children that every couple is supposed to have. I'm suggesting that the very idea of regulating fertility is itself the moral danger to be avoided. But the antinatalism that fails to celebrate large families, that fails to celebrate children being born, and fails to invest society in the central task of raising the young, that's a big problem. We'll be right back with final thoughts. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler program. Shifting gears, I think we all need to recognize that a couple of things are taking place today. First of all, in Fort Hood, Texas, President Barack Obama and others led in a memorial service to the dead there, even as an investigation continues to unfold, revealing new information about the shooter and his ties to a radical Islamic cleric and to a mosque that was known to have been frequented by at least some of the 9/11 conspirators. So troubling things happening there, but the president spoke at the memorial service, and it's another reminder to us of the cost of this kind of attack and in the lives of very real people. Very, very sober reminder of the reality of human evil And I'll tell you what frustrates me is when there are those who will not state that this is as evil as it looks. Very, very troubling that the first recourse of many people in a situation like this is to try to find some way to excuse a man who has done such things of what he has done. The recourse to therapy here, to a therapeutic explanation, is a form of moral evasion. We need to note that. Also tonight at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, John Allen Muhammad is scheduled to be executed by the state of Virginia for the 2002 sniper terror attacks there in the Washington, D.C. area. The U.S. Supreme Court yesterday refused the appeal, and unless the governor of Virginia signs some kind of clemency and commutes the sentence, John Allen Muhammad, one of the two men, along with John Lee Malvo, the assigned guilt for those attacks. And you'll remember that during the year 2002, the nation's capital was gripped by a real sense of fear as Lee Boyd Malvo and John Allen Muhammad were involved in those sniper attacks. Frightening stuff. Again, remember that they strategically parked the car and had a specially equipped rifle in the trunk of a car in order to pick innocent people off as targets and shoot them. One of the most difficult issues for any society is to understand how justice can be applied in such a situation. And in the United States of America, as much as capital punishment continues to be a controversial issue, it's interesting and morally instructive to note that in this case, there has been no public outcry to suggest that the death penalty is not deserved. It's fascinating to see how the American conscience begins to think about an issue and work through an issue. Every once in a while, there is that moral clarity we talked about yesterday when everyone realizes what was done was evil and must be punished. We need to be instructed by when that is present and when it is not. Back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. I'll meet you then on the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.